Everyone has a fave Wendy's Frosty flavor. And when you're choosing from chocolate or vanilla, it's not that hard. But now, there's all new Frosty Swirls and Frosty Fusions. So try picking your fave from Oreo Brownie Fusion, Pop-Tarts Strawberry Fusion, Strawberry Swirl, Brownie Batter Swirl, Caramel Swirl, and Caramel Crunch Fusion. Not so easy now, huh? For a fresh way to Frosty, gotta be Wendy's. Open till midnight or later.
At participating U.S. Wendy's, hours may vary by location. Oreo is a trademark of Mondelez International Group. Pop-Tarts is a trademark of Kellogg North America Co., LLC. Used with permission.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast Between the Sticks. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the barking voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Good morning, Matthew.
Good morning, Richard.
How the devil?
Not too bad. You?
Fantastic. Yes, a little bit tired. There's a reason for that. Barking indeed.
So, a new recruit in the Lee household.
Yeah, I have got myself a dog. Yeah, I think like so many people in lockdown, got to that point, thought, well, it'd be nice to have a little bit of company. So, yes, a chow chow.
So, what's a chow chow?
Chow chow is a chow chow. I don't really know how to describe a chow chow other than to say it is a chow chow.
So what does it look like?
Looks like a little teddy bear.
So is it like a, it's not, I don't know, a chow chow to me, I think of Chihuahua. I'm not saying they're the same dog, but I think of a dog that isn't your customary golden retriever, Labrador, that type of dog. It's not your classic home dog.
No, I think it's Asian descent, I want to say. And at the moment, she is a little teddy bear, but she will grow up to be quite a big teddy bear. But really, really fluffy. Really badly behaved as well so far, I have to say.
No, really? Why is that?
Dreadful. Yeah, just only had her a few days, but in terms of just not listening. Very stubborn. Only walks when she wants to walk. Can't actually take her for walks. In terms of being trained, absolutely nothing going on. Very bitey as well. Cut me several times. So far, not great, but it's still very early and I'm still confident.
Okay. Has she been placed in front of that small goal that you've got in your office?
I tried. She had no interest whatsoever. I gave her a football and she popped it.
Okay. Well, plenty coming up. Actually, not plenty. That's a lie. There wasn't a whole lot of goalkeeping action this week for the midweek fixtures. Not too many goalkeeping talking points, but a few. So we're certainly going to cover them. We're, of course, going to be speaking about David De Gea and Aaron Ramsdale in that defeat for Manchester United at home to Sheffield United just last night. Emi Martinez, good. Nick Pope, very good. Jordan Pickford, good. Not so good. Who knows? We'll get onto all of that and the best of the rest from the EFL too. But first, Richard, some correspondence. We've had a tweet in from Mark O'Leary who says, "Hey lads, love the podcast, listen to it every week. A quick question, do you think Sam Johnstone and Carl Darlow, who have both been brilliant this year, will bag an England call-up or won't it happen because of the clubs they're playing for?" Mark has also asked Richard whether you have any advice for keepers out there who struggle with anxiety before a game.
Two great questions, thank you as always. In terms of the two keepers mentioned, yeah, it will impact. It's not necessarily the clubs they play for, but the style of football. Now, you could argue that obviously Sam Johnstone would play a little bit more football than the likes of Nick Pope or a Carl Darlow, but I think we've certainly seen it with Nick Pope. And look, I'm a fan of Nick Pope and Jordan Pickford. What they've done, what they've both done is extraordinary and obviously far beyond anything that I ever did, certainly. But of course, Jordan Pickford has always got the nod over Nick Pope. Now, there has been times, I don't think anybody can argue this, that Nick Pope has been in better form than Jordan Pickford, which at the moment, I would say that's the case. More for the fact that Nick Pope is just extraordinary at the moment. Yet, it does seem that he's not getting that nod when it comes to playing for England. So, of course, I think playing for particular clubs is going to help, but it is largely, I think, because of the type of football those teams play and how that would mirror how England play.
I certainly think this is going to be another conversation we'll have in a few months should Euro 2020/21 go ahead, because I would imagine that the way Gareth Southgate has chosen his goalkeepers since he's been in charge, that it is going to be one or two, whoever it is, Jordan Pickford and Nick Pope. So it's that number three spot, right? That's really, I think, what will probably, I might be wrong, what's going to be up for grabs. And so you throw Darlow, you throw Johnstone, Dean Henderson, of course, who's the one who's had it so far. You throw Alex McCarthy in that mix as well.
Absolutely. Well, look, this is one of the most pleasing things for me about this season is the number of English goalkeepers playing in the Premier League. You know, I remember years gone by where there was only two or three and it was largely foreign goalkeepers. But for the England national team to have so many playing in the Premier League and so many playing well, it's great to see that the competition for places is what it is. But yeah, look, I think it's an excellent question. And I think that in short, yes, it does play a part. In terms of anxiety, yeah, look, this is something I could really go into huge depth on because it was something that I experienced myself. I did all sorts of studying on it, really educated myself as to how I could get myself into the best frame of mind when it came to approaching games of football and not suffer the kind of nerves that can be crippling if you allow them to grow too much. So again, something I could spend a long time on, but just to give some real basic advice, just understand that whatever you're thinking, that will release certain chemicals into your body and you will feel a certain way. What I'd say is just be curious with how you feel. Like, there's no right or wrong way to feel, but don't get down on yourself if you're feeling nervous. Don't find yourself getting upset or getting lethargic or dreading what's about to come. Understand why those feelings are there. It's a natural human thing to have some nerves. It's fight or flight. It's something that will happen. If you've got a big game, it could well happen to you. Now, again, you'll have heard this before. If you can guide them directly, they will allow you to play a better game than you've ever played in your life. But it's key that you're able to guide them. How do you guide them? First and foremost, it's to do with your thought patterns. What are you thinking? Are you allowing those nerves to mean that you're thinking things that aren't necessarily going to help your game? Or are you starting to think about all the best games you've played before and how today is going to be your best game? Are you allowing those nerves to become excitement, or are you allowing them to have the crippling effect that they can sometimes have?
Sounds like we're listening to a Richard Lee audiobook here, mate.
Indeed, indeed.
It is a big question though, isn't it? And one that often comes up when we speak to a lot of the kids that we do as part of the GK University, when we do the goalkeeper interviews that we do as well. Often we get onto the subject of anxiety and trying to be positive around it, because I see a lot on Twitter as well. And actually a lot of the questions that we get asked from those kids is, what happens if I make a mistake? What happens if I can't communicate with my defense? It's all about what happens if they can't do something. And it's about trying to flip that. And one of the audiobooks that you focus on is affirmations, is trying to be positive all the time.
Yeah, that does play a part. I mean, it's not necessarily positive all the time, but it's essentially feeling empowered all the time. That's what I would say. Because look, at times you're going to make mistakes. Now, I'm not the type of person to say, well, I'll just forget about it, ignore it, it didn't happen. Da-da. You can learn from the mistakes. It's more a case of detaching yourself from your game, not being emotionally attached to your game when it's not going well, because ultimately it is a game. It's fun. It's something you want to be as good as you can possibly be at. That doesn't mean you should then fear making mistakes. In fact, I know we're going to be plugging the Kasper Schmeichel podcast that we did. And, you know, I certainly recommend you guys listening to that, because he talks about this area in quite a bit of depth. And again, he simplifies it and just gives such a good way of dealing with the mental pressures that come with being a goalkeeper. Because look, being a goalkeeper is so different to any other position on the field. You know, it's the reason we do this podcast, let's be honest. It is a completely different sport within a sport. And the mental pressures, the anxiety, etc., that you may get, if you learn how to control it and the skills to control it, then again, that can help take your game to another level.
Yeah, you mentioned Kasper there, your audiobooks as well, all available on patreon.com/goalkeepersunion, as is Richard, the Kasper Schmeichel interview that we carried out. A really, really good chat, wasn't it?
Yeah, fantastic. I mean, we were building up to it for a little while. Me and you were quite excited about it. Someone that I've played against before and been a huge admirer of for quite some time. And look, we talk about him so often on this podcast in terms of how consistent that he's been for years now. You know, very, very few mistakes. Yeah. Just such an effective goalkeeper in everything he does. So to get him on the podcast, and we just had the intention that we didn't want to talk necessarily about his career. We just wanted to dig into his mind, because my thinking was, right, if I'm a 15-year-old goalkeeper, 12-year-old goalkeeper, 30-year-old goalkeeper, it doesn't matter. But if I'm an amateur goalkeeper and I want to improve what I do, then of course you want to learn from the best. So it was essentially an hour and a half of us just digging into Kasper Schmeichel's mind. And he was so giving with the advice, the information. Yeah, fantastic interview.
It's time for a snippet, I think.
We love a snippet, don't we?
Here's Kasper, and there were so many different things that he spoke about, but here he is specifically speaking about how he studies other sports, NFL, tennis, and of course he gets into the fact that goalkeeping is indeed a sport within a sport.
I tend to look at other sports a lot. So the one position or sport I always look at is the quarterback in the NFL. You know, they doesn't matter what time of the game, what's at stake, they have to make the right decision. And someone like, I love watching Tom Brady. I used to love watching Peyton Manning and these guys. One was their preparation, you know, their muscle memory. They trusted their process. They trusted their ability so much that when that moment arrived where the game was on the line, they were so in control and so calm because they'd done it so many times before that there was no reason to rush it. There was no reason to panic. There was no reason to be nervous or anything like that because they knew they'd done it that many times. They knew that they had the ability. And the other one is tennis. You know, tennis has a lot of similar movements to goalkeeping, and the mentality of being a team player in basically what is a single sport, because goalkeeping is a different sport within the sport. There's only one of you in the team that can play, and it's so different to what all the others do. Like I say, you wear a different kit, so you have to also have, along with the team mentality sport, you have to have an individual mentality sport, because in individual sports you are solely responsible for your performance. You can't blame anything or anyone else if you don't perform. And as a goalkeeper, you have to do your homework, and your homework is many, many things. You know, your homework is study and, you know, all these kind of things, but you have to do your mental preparation. You have to do your physical training, your stuff in the gym, but then you have to do your stuff out on the pitch. And the stuff out on the pitch is, yeah, that's the bread and butter. And you get to a point where you can do it in your sleep. Practically, you can catch volleys, half volleys, all these kind of things in your sleep, but you have to keep doing them because of that muscle memory. So it just becomes completely natural when it comes to game time. You know, you don't have to think about it. It's just completely instinctive. As a youngster, I used to stand and just volley a ball up against a wall and catch it and keep doing that over and over and over and over again, you know, hundreds of thousands of times through my career and still do. And whether I'm sitting on the couch watching TV, I've got a tennis ball in my hand, you know, you're working your coordination, left, right hand, you know, all these kind of little things that will help you when the time comes. And they're so, so important. And for me, I've always wanted to be over-prepared. I would hate if something kind of happened in the game and I could look and I had to look at myself and say, you didn't prepare for that, or you didn't do that well enough, or something like that. Yeah, that's where I kind of always tried to outwork every other keeper or outwork any other teammate to make sure that when I was put in that position, I was ready.
Yes, that was Casper there. You can find that interview now over at patreon.com/goalkeepersunion. Okay. We'll get on with it, shall we? If you'd like to get in touch with us, very easy to do so on Twitter at gkunionhello@goalkeepersunion.net or our brand new mobile number 07503 673 020. On with the show?
Let's do it.
We shall start at Old Trafford. Manchester United 1, Sheffield United 2, and 2 aerial challenges on goalkeepers. 1 given as a goal, 1 not given as a goal. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer said it was a foul on David De Gea. He said it wasn't a foul on Aaron Ramsdale. Rich, I'm going to come to you for your view in a minute. But first, the views of the Twitter sphere. Ian Brooks says De Gea was a foul for me. It was a big push, although it didn't appear to affect him too much. So I think if he had got given the foul, he could count himself lucky. Ramsdale 1 did not look like a huge contact, but was impeded to a degree. So you would have to give them both. Steve Lawton just sent the old Alan Partridge shrug gif. Pete Deller says, hard to comment without seeming pro or anti-United. I wasn't really looking at the one De Gea, but Ramsdale certainly got a heavy enough bang to be given as a foul. It was fun to watch BT trying to say both were wrong, but both should have been given. GK Specific says, both fouls. Every goalkeeper has the right to get to their highest point without being restricted by opposition, whether it's by mistake or purposeful by them. Owen Slattery says De Gea's was a stonewall foul. Smart from the Sheffield United player, but VAR is there for that stuff, surely. Ramsdale's looked like a foul initially, but less like one after a few replays. Seemed a genuine challenge and he lost it. Perhaps you could give it for jumping into the arm. Welly says, not sure either was a foul. Never mind winky face. Also, De Gea pushes Brian before he's bumped by Sharp. David Turner says, neither was a foul, just weak goalkeeping. Josh says, De Gea foul, Ramsdale no foul. It's so clear. Divesh-Nair agrees with that and says De Gea got pushed in the back and Ramsdale seemed to drop it without much contact. Christopher says Ramsdale foul, De Gea no foul, both rather pensive goalkeeping, to which Joe replied and said, having a laugh, aren't you? Either both are a foul or not. There is no way you can give a foul for one and not the other. But Richard, what say you?
Yeah, do you know what I want to start? I want to start on Aaron Ramsdale shot from distance, because this is the kind of thing. In fact, there's two places I want to start, which aren't the questions you've asked, and then I'll come round to them. Aaron Ramsdale, I thought, was very good on the whole, and I wanted to make a point of this. He's had a tough time. I say he's had a tough time. He's had a lot of negative press. Let's be real about it. He's had a lot of negative press. So I was really pleased for him. Really, really pleased. And there was one shot in the second half, a shot from distance, moving, for me, moving all over the place. On commentary, they said it wasn't, but it was. It was a knuckleball, moving all over the place. Pitched just before him, and he's got down, held it well, greasy surface. No, I thought it was excellent. I thought that was, for me, a key moment in the game. And it was kind of a nothing moment, but I think for a lot of goalkeepers watching, it's one of those moments where I was just really happy for him, you know, and he's given a little smile after he's made the save. And he did look like he was enjoying himself last night.
Is that arguably, without being too dramatic, is that arguably that specific save you're talking about, potentially a turning point in his season? Because thereafter, he did look like he was really enjoying himself. He was coming for crosses, collecting everything, like we've seen Nick Pope-esque, I suppose you could say, in recent weeks. And he just had a smile on his face. There was one effort from Alex Telles that was deflected and hit the bar. He scrambled back on that one. It went over for a corner and he was laughing about it. He was always trying to get Harry Maguire's eye. You could tell a bit of banter between two. Well, he was a former Sheffield United player and now a Sheffield United player again. Harry Maguire, of course, where he started his career. But he just looked like he was enjoying himself.
He did. Do you know what I almost think? And it's, you know, sometimes with not just goalkeeping, but anything, where you build it up as much as you do and it stresses you out and the pressures that you've got and everything else. But sometimes you just get to a point when you almost think, well, it can't really get any worse. And I'm not saying that because, look, you guys listening in, you know my thoughts on Aaron Ramsdale. I don't think he's having a bad season, but it's being portrayed that he's having an absolute shocker of a season. So I just wonder if you get to that point, you're like, well, do you know what? It can't get any worse. I might as well just enjoy it. And it looked like that. He looked a lot freer in his expressions. And it's not necessarily how he played, but just his expressions, where he's looked quite pained at times recently. He was smiling when he was making a lot of these saves and coming for crosses. You mentioned last 10, 15 minutes took the pressure off the team very well. And I just thought, yeah, he just looked fluid. He looked free. And it was nice to watch him. I really, yeah, really enjoyed it.
Okay. And
the other point, I was going to say, I was going to make another point before we talk about the goals. And it's actually the second goal. And it wasn't, obviously, nothing you can do on the finish itself where it's taken the big deflection, hit the bar and gone in. Nothing David De Gea could do on that. It was moments before that when the ball's kind of come back to him. It's a pass back. Didn't know what to do. So he's just passed it into an area. And for me, that kind of sums up where I think goalkeeping is at the moment, where goalkeepers are so hell-bent on playing and not just kicking it out. Actually reminds me, for those, I know we've got a few Chelsea fans that listen in, Carlo Cudicini did a very similar thing at Old Trafford years ago, a game between Man United and Chelsea, where ball came to him at his feet and again, just passed it wide rather than just smashing it out of play. Might look a bit uncultured, but when you're under pressure, there's nowhere you can go. You've got no players to play to. You've got 2 or 3 yards between you and the Sheffield United player. My thought would have just been, just get rid of it. You know, but I've seen the likes of...
To where though? Where would he get rid of it?
Corner? I mean, ideally for a throw-in. If you can. Right. I always remember Dave Watson. It was quite a famous moment where he had a similar position and he just pulled it out for a corner. And actually, I thought in that moment, David De Gea had enough time just to swing his foot and just get it out for a throw. When you're under that much pressure, and in the end, he's just passed it into an area. Of course, Sheffield United get the ball 2 or 3 passes later and it ends up in the back of the net. And I just thought, again, there's no blame attached necessarily, because the point is, I think every Premier League goalkeeper does that now, or certainly most do that now, because it doesn't look particularly cultured if you're just putting your foot through it. And also because of the pressure from managers in order to play, I think it's one of those moments where he's looked to pass it in the hope that it might go to a United shirt. And of course, they've kept possession. But I just think when you're under that much pressure, my decision making would just be safety, pure safety.
I actually think that whole scenario is a complete mess from Manchester United, wasn't it? I think there was just a lack of communication as well, because Harry Maguire could have even taken charge of that situation if he'd actually not even passed it back to David De Gea and just, I know it sounds crazy, dribbled it through the 6-yard box and then launched it the other side. There wasn't actually anybody there causing him any pressure. So the communication between him, between De Gea, between Tuan Zabi, between Tears, between the whole back line from United there, I thought was a bit of a shambles.
Yeah, no, I'd have to agree. Now I'll come on to the actual question.
Thank you.
If you'd like me to. Okay, so I'm probably going to sit on the fence a little bit here, because when I first saw it, what I would say is he doesn't look particularly dominant in coming for the cross. And if you were to compare him with other goalkeepers that come for crosses and look that much stronger when they come for crosses, he didn't look particularly strong. It looked like a bit of a half-hearted effort, and the balls ended up in the net. And at first you think there's nothing wrong with that. Of course, when you watch the replay and you see that there is a little nudge on him from Billy Sharp, I think it was, wasn't there? I've got to be careful, because I've always made the point that if you are jumping for a ball and you get nudged, you're not in control, and it only takes a small nudge for you to be even more out of control. And the same happened to Aaron Ramsdale. You see, at first you asked me what I thought, and I said David De Gea no foul, Aaron Ramsdale was a foul. Again, I've watched them both from different angles, and you see that little nudge on David De Gea. And again, I've got to stand by what I've said before, that if you are getting nudged, it is going to impact you. You're not going to be able to get your fist to the ball if someone has nudged your arm in the way that he did. So I'd have to say foul on both, but I guess I would do, given the position that I always take when it comes to goalkeepers getting challenged on crosses.
It is funny with De Gea, though, isn't it? Typically, the goalkeepers' union curse is struck again, whereby you were saying what a great, or not a great season he was having, but you were saying it was certainly testament to the fact that we're not talking about him so much that his season must be going far better than it had been.
Do you know what I would say as well with David De Gea? And this is just an opinion, and again, you're more than welcome to disagree with me on this. I think the most difficult games for David De Gea are when he comes up against a Sheffield United, a Burnley, who would be the other ones, where you are dealing with aerial balls. And it's something that has been said about him a lot. Now, of course, he has improved drastically over the years. You know, when he first came to the English game, that was a huge criticism. Then, of course, he seemed to get over that, became that little bit more dominant, really found what his game was in England, and was absolutely phenomenal year on year. But every now and then, there is that aerial challenge. And by the way, he wasn't the only one in this round of games. I know we're going to be talking about David Raya shortly. You just mentioned the Aaron Ramsdale one as well. I think there was a couple of others as well that came up in the Football League as well. So the other thing to take into account is that this time of the year as well, you've got wind, you've got rain. It's not particularly pleasant when it is goalkeepers coming for these crosses. So there's other things to take into account. But I do wonder how David De Gea feels when he's coming up against teams that are intent on whipping the ball under the crossbar from corners, from free kicks, and really putting that pressure on him.
Is it part of his game that we should occasionally be calling into question, though? And I don't want to speak out of turn here, and I've always championed David De Gea, but this is a goalkeeper that for a huge swathe of his career was regarded as one of the best goalkeepers in the world. Still is, but for a period he was regarded as the best goalkeeper in the world. So that being the case, should it be that we still actually question his ability when balls come into the box? As in crosses?
Look, I think that the game has changed. It's changed in favour of the likes of David De Gea. Because, by the way, David De Gea isn't the only one that maybe doesn't come for loads of crosses. I think goalkeepers in general now come for less crosses than they did before. And I think that largely that's because of the quality of the balls that are being whipped in. But also, someone like David De Gea, he would rather stay on his line a lot of the time and trust his instincts, trust his reflexes, because they're so good. You think of some of the incredible saves he's made, from reaction saves from 4 or 5 yards, and that's something that he really prides himself on. So look, I just think it's a style of goalkeeping. I don't think there's necessarily a right or a wrong. I think that you'll get certain managers will want that big, dominant goalkeeper who's coming for every cross, but you will then also get other managers that's not such a big deal. They might have their two big centre-halves who are doing that kind of a job. So look, I think it's just a style. I think that David De Gea's strengths are in other areas. That's my opinion. But as I say, I think that football, certainly Premier League football, there aren't many teams now that whip the ball under the crossbar. How many teams now do a long throw? You know, you think about how effective a long throw has been over the years, and yet you would very rarely see a lot of the top teams using a long throw unless it's absolutely desperate. Also, it almost goes against the purity of playing a great game of football. So I think that when David De Gea is playing against teams that aren't doing that, there's going to be games where he's never going to come for a cross. But of course, there are still teams out there that like to make the defence work, like to make the goalkeepers work, like to put them under pressure a little bit. And I do wonder, I go back to my point, I wonder how, not just David De Gea, but goalkeepers that aren't necessarily overly fond of coming for loads of crosses, let's say, how do they feel when they're playing against a team that just keeps whipping it under the crossbar?
As you mentioned the other two in the EFL, we might as well touch on those now. One was the game between Swansea and Brentford. It was a cross that came in from Conor Hourihan. It was Jake Bidwell that jumped up with David Raya and seemed to just shift his arms in order for him to not be able to gather the cross. That was given as a goal. And in the game between Barnsley and Cardiff City, it was Alex Smithies in goal. A cross came in and Corley Woodrowe went up for the challenge with Smithies. And Cardiff centre-back Aidan Flint seemed to shove Woodrowe into Smithies, which prompted Smithies to fumble and the ball to go in. That one wasn't given.
Yeah, and look, I've got to go down a similar path on both of these. When I first watched the David Raya one, I thought, oh, could he have been a bit stronger? Very similar to David De Gea. And then, of course, you see the replay and you've got a great snapshot that you put on our Twitter page. And again, at the point when David Raya would have made contact with the ball, Jake Bidwell's all over him. For me, that is a foul. And then certainly the Alex Smithies, there's not a lot he can do. Whether it's a foul or not, it's actually more to do with Aidan Flint, because if obviously Aidan Flint is pushing the attacking player into him, then it's not a foul, but it's no error of Alex Smithies necessarily, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not a goalkeeping error, that. No. But surely that's a foul. Aidan Flint is pushing Corley Woodrowe into his keeper.
Yeah, a foul the other way, you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. Do we agree? I don't know. I'm a bit lost.
Yeah, it was a foul. It was given as a foul to the goalkeeper, who technically couldn't have done any more, but it wasn't because of him. It was because of the defender. They know what we mean.
Okay, so those four, just to finish on this. I know you said you're going to sit on the fence slightly, but I'm going to put you on the spot. De Gea?
Foul.
Ramsdale?
Foul.
Raya?
Foul.
Smithies?
Not a foul, but not Smithies' fault. Do you know what? This sounds like I'm backing up the goalkeepers too much.
Goalkeeping propaganda.
No, when it comes to crosses, it's a delicate subject, because do you know what it all boils down to? Was Oakwell, 2007. It was a cold Tuesday night. We're 2-1 up. Ball whipped to the far post. I go up to claim it. Arm across the face. Foul all day. Ref doesn't give it. 2-2. They grab a winner in the last minute. I get dropped the next week.
Oh, no.
There you go.
There we go. So still, that's what's haunting you.
I think that's what it is. And I cannot get over that.
Okay, so that was a 3-2 defeat.
It was.
It was also a 3-2 defeat for Aston Villa at Turf Moor. Emi Martinez and Nick Pope, however, both stealing the headlines yet again. Emi Martinez, a pretty decent performance, made a very good save from Chris Wood that ended up a few phases of play later, resulting in Jack Grealish putting Villa ahead. Burnley, a great comeback. And Nick Pope, as close, I think, to flawless as you can get from a goalkeeping performance.
Every week, I mean, we're talking about Nick Pope a lot, but I keep saying it. The fact that Burnley scored 3 goals, I'm guessing that's the first time they've done that this season because of the number of goals they've scored, but Burnley shouldn't be doing as well as they are. You know, Nick Pope has been phenomenal, I think, for them again this season. And it will be really interesting when the next England squad's announced, how that scene, you know, the relationship between him and Jordan Pickford. Because, look, again, I know we're going to touch on Jordan Pickford shortly, and people know I'm a big fan of Jordan Pickford. It is just, if you were to put them side by side and say who's having the better season, I'm pretty sure that if we asked 10 people, you've got at least 8, if not 9, saying that Nick Pope is having the better season. So that will be fascinating to see. But yeah, look, once again, I thought he was excellent. We obviously always touch on saves, or we ordinarily touch on saves, and he did make a really good one down to his right sharp. It's just his movement. He looks incredibly solid with his set, and the save he made down to his right and the intelligence to parry it in the area that he did, almost back across himself, just very, very good. And Martinez, you mentioned it, I thought, very unfortunate with the goal, the one that went across him. And it's like those horrible free kicks that go in the far post. They evade everyone, but you're kind of expecting a header and they end up creeping in the far post. Similarity to that, obviously slightly different because it was a driven shot on the angle. But of course, you had people sliding in. So his angle of dive wasn't necessarily as forward as it might have been, if that makes sense. And he wasn't quite able to get there. But the save you touched on was very good, where he's turned off the near post. And it was just the fact that he got him set so neutral in terms of his weight distribution. So he was then able to get back on his right and make a very good save top right, which I think, had he have allowed his momentum to take hold, he might not have been able to get back to his right.
There's one type of Nick Pope save that I just want to ask you about, and you'll be able to articulate this far better than me, but it's a type of Nick Pope save that you tend to see a lot. Now, it's a lot to do with his positioning, I would imagine, but it's almost where it hits him, because I sound like one of those commentators, but he's able to maneuver his body that the strike comes in. It almost like he shoves his shoulder at it. It's like robotic. Mm. Do you know what I mean? It hits his chest or something, or it might hit his bicep, where he's not diving, he's not spreading, he's not blocking. He's just got this epic robotic barrier.
Like the Terminator.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, look, you're right, because there is a natural tendency when the ball's struck, the natural tendency is to get your hands to it. How many times do you see it where, say, a ball struck, and because the goalkeeper is trying to either get their hands or feet to it, they almost get out of the way in order to try and make the save, and the ball ends up going in. So to actually have the awareness to be able to make that type of save, as you say, I remember, I think Manuel Neuer had a very famous one as well, very similar. I think he actually did make it with his hand, but it was a real solid, it's coming towards him, and he just parries it back out, bangs it back out. Very little movement, really strong in how they hold that position. But I think there is a certain awareness to be able to make saves with other parts of the body, you know, because there is, again, a natural tendency to want to get your feet or hands to it. But certainly Nick Pope has got that ability.
Two of the biggest pecs you'll see as well, I think, in the Premier League. Emi Martinez is quite thick set, isn't he? I've noticed that.
Yeah.
And Pope's pecs, his chest, is massive.
Well, I mean, we're going down a strange route here, Matthew, but yes, they have got very, very big pecs.
Am I making a silly point now? I think that's quite a valid point. We spoke to George Long on the podcast a couple of years ago, and I made a point about his biceps because they did seem to be almost disproportionately large for his arms. And he said he'd never used any kind of bicep curls, any exercise to increase his biceps. And I found that quite interesting. I find the conditioning of goalkeepers quite interesting. So the fact that I've noticed Nick Pope has a larger than average chest for some of the other goalkeepers in the Premier League is a point that I thought I'd like to make.
It's a fascinating point. It really is. I'll tell you, should we just put this out to the listeners? Like, how important is it to have big pecs
have a
if
look.
You're a goalkeeper?
Next time you watch it, have a look.
Do you know what I'd say is that Martinez, you're right, in fairness, Martinez has got a very different shape, I would say, to most goalkeepers in the Premier League. If anything, you're seeing goalkeepers now with that tall, lean physique that tends to be the sort of goalkeeper you see now. But Martinez certainly has a very different, looks really powerful. Martinez does. I will give him that.
Good. Okay. Nothing wrong with varying the conversation, Richard.
Absolutely. On next week's show, we'll be talking about triceps and the impact they play when throwing a ball.
Perfect. Okay. Look forward to that one. Let's get on to the rest of the Premier League action before we move on to that aforementioned goal conceded by Jordan Pickford in Everton's draw with Leicester. Vicente Guaita, decent save from Mikel Antonio, point blank at Selhurst.
Very good. Yeah, great reactions to make the save. And even more impressive for me was the bravery shown after to get at the feet of the striker and make a really brave second save in that sequence. Very good.
Okay, at St Mary's, Alex McCarthy, a very good save from Alexandre Lacazette early on in that game, but not quite right, perhaps, for the second goal from Arsenal scored by Bukayo Saka.
Yeah, no, it was a very good save. We'll touch on that first. It was, you know, we talk a lot about different goalkeepers and how they choose to spread. You get some that are doing the splits almost now, and they all seem to have their own little intricacies when it comes to the spread. I think with Alex McCarthy here, he did very well to get within a couple of yards of the striker that was having the shot. And Moore just went down on his side, but just made himself very big. Got a big frame anyway, so made it very difficult and made a good save with his legs. And yeah, on the goal, it's one that, again, we're talking about goalkeepers playing on the front foot, trying to impact play, trying to read through balls. And this was one, if you watch it from behind the goal, it's quite interesting because he's backpedaling as the ball's coming towards him. Then when he sees the ball come through, if you pause it at the moment the ball comes through, it is a 50-50 and he fancies himself to come and get involved. And for me, it's just more the angle in which he approaches the ball and he's quite straight. So the fact that he's not then getting there first, there's very little he can do. And you could see he has the opportunity to bring him down. And had he done that, would have got a red card. So of course, then decides to pull out of the challenge, but then made it a very easy finish in the end for the opposing player. But look, it's one of them. We've all done it. We've all done it many times. Those through balls are very, very hard to read. If he gets there a split second earlier, we're saying it's fantastic goalkeeping.
Over to the Hawthorns. Yes, Manchester City convincingly beat West Brom, but who knows? Maybe it could have been different, but for some good goalkeeping from Edison, first to read the game and effectively tackle Jake Livermore early on, and then a very good save from a close range effort from Semi Ajayi. And Steve Bruce, Rich, just as we were discussing in the last podcast, he opted for Carl Darlow and not Martin Dubravka.
Yes, indeed. No, really interesting situation there. Maybe they were listening. Maybe Steve Bruce tunes in to our podcast.
Maybe he does. If he does, he's about to hear this. Commentary corner. So I actually thought we were going to get away with not doing a commentary corner for this particular episode of the podcast, Richard, but it just came right at the death when I was listening to Match of the Day last night. This was Jordan Pickford conceding an equaliser from Youri Tielemans in Everton's draw with Leicester. Was it almost a very good save, or was it an error, or was it both, or was it neither? Let's get on to the commentary, or the punditry, after the game on Match of the Day. Gary Lineker said Pickford has to be blamed for this one. Earlier on, they'd actually showcased Nick Pope, so they did. Oh, we know, we've just seen Nick Pope, and the England number one at the moment has to be blamed for this one. Martin Keown says, well, he has a nervy moment because this is going wide. The cross that came in initially that he parried off for the corner, he shouldn't do it. Initial ball into the box, he flapped at the cross, and he's nervy at this point. His positioning, technically there, I think he should be further forward, and I think he should be stood up so he can see it better. And he could have even cleared it with his foot. If there's a defender there, you'd like to think they could clear that, and he gets it all wrong. It's a massive error. Dion Dublin came in and argued whether it had gone through bodies, and Keown said, you could say that. I just think he loses his bearings a bit. Lineker jumps in and says, yeah, plenty of time after that, though. And Keown says he should be nudging forward there. He'll know himself. He also suggested that the presence of Gareth Southgate, who was in the crowd at Goodison, or the crowd in the seats at Goodison, maybe put pressure on him.
Okay, I massively disagree with Martin Keown. Okay, if he's further forward, what does that do? I mean, there's a real obvious point. Does that give him more chance of making a save when ultimately it's a reaction save? So if anything, the deeper you are, the better. So no, I thought his positioning was fine. Why is he low? He's low because he can't see the ball. That's the point. You're trying to look through legs. Again, goalkeepers listening in will be able to see this in a very different way, and they'll understand why a goalkeeper goes low in that situation. I used to do it. You're looking through legs. Of course, the higher you are, it's a lot harder to look through bodies than it is to look through legs. And if you can then see a glimpse of the ball, you might be able to react to it. So, of course, Dion Dublin's spot on. Of course, he did see it late. He's only seeing it 5 or 6 yards away from him. He's given himself a great chance by being as deep as he is, because if he was 2 or 3 yards further forward, it's already beaten him by the time it's reacted. The fact that he's low then means, of course, he is going to go with his hands. Now, is it a mistake or not? And this is where, and again, I probably sound like a broken record, but it's so black and white, whether it's a good save or a mistake. If he puts this round the post, we're talking about this as a fantastic save. And then we're talking as well about the 3 or 4 other decent saves he makes in this game. And we're saying it's an excellent performance in a 1-0 win. Of course, the fact that it hits the post and goes in, now it's being seen as a Pickford error. I think every single headline that I saw was along the lines of Pickford error. Ancelotti's got a decision to make now, etc., etc., etc. But I just think that, can it be saved? Yes. Is it a big error? No. Could he do better? Marginally. You know, that's essentially where I sit on this one. But I think in terms of his positioning, in terms of being low, I've got no problem with that whatsoever. Ultimately, he just wasn't able to react quick enough or get a firm enough hand. You know, you actually see the way in which it hits his hand. He doesn't quite get the solid contact that he needs in order to get it wide and out to safety.
Not a full complement of games throughout the Championship, League One and League Two, Richard. So I'm just going to feed you some tidbits and you're going to come back to me.
Love a tidbit.
Okay, starting actually in the FA Cup, Bournemouth beating Crawley. Asmir Begovic making a very good stop, which he had to make because he found himself in a bit of a tough spot.
He did. Do you know what? It's one of those where he's central, balls come back to him, you've got the ball at your feet, you've got strikers closing in from both angles, and you're not really left with a lot you can do. There's no options. So he has tried to play, I think, into the city midfielder. Correct me if I'm wrong, but got intercepted. But where you've got to give him huge credit was the speed at which he was able to get out to near enough the penalty spot and spread instantly and made a very, very good save. But again, look, it's the way that Bournemouth play and several teams in the Championship, certainly Bournemouth to a large extent, they really look to keep the ball at all times. So you're going to have a moment or two like this in the season.
Yep, Jamal Blackman, a very good save for Rotherham against Middlesbrough. Sam Morsi, it was 1-0 at the time and they went on to win that game, Rotherham. So a big save from Blackman and a very big save from Bentley as well. Dan Bentley, a solid tip over the bar from Janino Bakuna in Bristol City's win over Huddersfield.
Yeah, fantastic save. It's one of those, again, we talk a lot about positioning, shots from distance, and Dan Bentley's probably 3 yards, and we often talk like 2 to 3 is, I would say, the best place to be when it is from distance. You maximise reaction time, and it is that dipping shot under the bar that you do give yourself a great chance of saving, and he shows great power to get himself up, get fingertips to it. And look, it sounds like it was an absolute barrage. Certainly second half from Huddersfield in this one. Massive win for Bristol City, and that was certainly a key save.
At Barnsley, Bradley Collins staying in. He played in their FA Cup win over Norwich, but he stayed in goal for their draw with Cardiff. Jack Walton on the bench, and in the game between Coventry and Sheffield Wednesday, Kieran Westwood back in for the Owls. And Ben Wilson, I think it's worth saying, also still in for Coventry. Marco Morosi back fit now. He was on the bench.
Yeah, no, certainly a couple of interesting ones. I'll be honest, I was a little bit surprised to see that Jack Walton had got dropped effectively because of course, Barnsley having a good season. He seems to be having a reasonably good season himself. And huge credit to Ben Wilson. This really touched on what we were speaking about in the last podcast, wasn't it? About, and it sparked all sorts of debate in terms of your stock and when a 2 becomes a 1 and when a 2 gets in and does well. But look, Ben Wilson's come in, he's done well. I think what you'll find is certainly with Marco Morosi, when you've had an injury like that, and I can talk from experience because I broke my cheek, it's one that can take you a while to get back to not full fitness, but certainly full confidence, I'd say, because again, he's a brave goalkeeper, Marco Morosi, and if you're throwing yourself in and you've had a broken cheekbone, it's going to take you a while to get yourself back to 100% and feeling like you can do that. So with Ben Wilson doing as well as he is, it wouldn't surprise me if it's a few more weeks until Marco Morosi does get his place back.
Into League One, we should mention Joe Day, a solid performance at London Road. 12 saves he made for Bristol Rovers. He made a first clean sheet since joining Rovers on loan from Cardiff City. He was playing against one of his former clubs, so well done, Joe Day. Very, very good performance from you. And a bit of fun in the game between Rochdale and Oxford United. Gavin Batsunu and Jack Stevens, both experiencing opposite ends of the spectrum when it comes to shots from range.
Yeah, and do you know what? This is actually one that we're going to labour on a little bit. So I'm guessing a lot of you guys might not have seen it, but it was a shot from distance. This is the one that Jack Stevens faced. And the reason I wanted to highlight this was it was interesting in that it's a really good strike, 60-odd yards, but it's one of those that's drilled, you know, drilled so low. It's going over Jack Stevens' head, looked like it's going in, but Jack Stevens, rather than backpedaling in order to make the save, and he was quite far advanced, probably 20, 25 yards out of his goal, he turned round and ran back towards the goal, guessing where the ball would be, and at the last moment, turns back to face play, and because he'd got that extra distance, he was then able to make the save just above his head, just below the crossbar. Now, I wanted to highlight it because it's the kind of one that we've seen so many goals from distance, and it's something you don't necessarily learn as a goalkeeper. You know, what would you normally do? Would you normally just backpedal? Would you normally go maybe sidesteps? Or would you turn and run? And actually, you showed me a couple of examples that I thought were quite interesting. The Wayne Rooney one, in particular, against West Ham from, how many years ago would that have been?
So this was when he was playing for Manchester United, because he scored another one, didn't he, against Joe Hart, which was slightly different because he drilled it and Joe Hart was way out and no chance of getting the save. This one, I don't know, you're talking, what, 2013, 14, around that kind of time?
Yeah, it must have been around then. The interesting part for me was that the goalkeeper at the time, we think it was Adrian, I think, he adopted a very similar idea where, but it was a bit different because, of course, the ball was volleyed from Wayne Rooney, but still Adrian turns, runs towards his goal, but by the time he's turned round, the ball's nowhere near where he thought it would be, so he's effectively ran in the wrong direction, and of course the ball bounces on the line and goes into the roof of the net. So I just think, again, I don't know what's right or wrong in this situation, because I think if you backpedal, you've got your eyes on the ball at all times, which makes sense. But of course, you're not going to get the speed back towards your goal. Whereas if you turn and run towards your goal, you're going to get more distance, but you might turn around and find that the ball's moved and it isn't necessarily where you think it should be. And certainly with goalkeepers now playing more and more advanced. It was only a few weeks ago we were talking about the David Raya one from distance that he was beaten from 70-odd yards. Very similar situation. So I just wonder whether that's almost going to become a part of goalkeeping. If you are the type of goalkeeper that plays on the front foot, the type of goalkeeper that finds themselves 25, 30, 35 yards from goal at times trying to impact play, how do you then recover? What's the best way to recover?
And I'm sure it won't be the last time that we labour on this point, but if we go back, I mean, you gave Rooney, which is a contemporary reference. If you go back to, I don't know, the mid-90s, David Seaman, the infamous example of Naeem scoring past him in that Cup Winners' Cup final. That one was, again, a slightly different technique that he adopted.
Yeah, so he was backpedalling. I mean, that's a great example, actually, because he was backpedalling. It's like that one when you've got to cross to the far post, and do you side shuffle or do you cross your feet? Now, I always recommend that you cross your feet, again, because of the speed that you can get towards a back post, and then to be able to jump from there. But from memory, and I'm saying this without having seen those pictures for a long time, from memory, in my mind, I remember him backpedalling, and of course, he mistimes the jump ever so slightly, and in the end, ends up in a heap in the goal, effectively. So, look, I don't know. I think it's just an interesting talking point. It's something that is happening now more and more. It used to be such a rarity. You think when David Beckham scored that goal against Wimbledon all those years ago, and everyone was just astounded because it wasn't something that you saw every day. But now players have that ability. They can shoot from 60, 70 yards with absolute precision. And when you are a goalkeeper, like so many now that are playing in the way they do, I wonder if it's something that will start to be coached.
Perfect, Richard. Thank you.
No, thank you, Matthew.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Keepers
away!